Good day and welcome to the Manhattan Institute's podcasts. I'm Amity Schlaes, jury chair for the Hayek Book Prize, given in honor of the great economist Friedrich August von Hayek. Joining me today is one of the finalists for the prize, Karen DeWisha. Dr. DeWisha is professor and director at the Havinger Center for Russian and Post-Soviet Studies, and that's at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. The book that is being honored is Putin's Kleptocracy, Who Owns Russia? And it is published in the U.S., but not in Britain. And we'll get to hear about that later. The publisher is Simon & Schuster.
Thanks very much.
Just congratulations, Dr. DeWisha. You've spoken quite a bit about your book. It's been a little controversial. And we heard you mention that you thought this moment was a very important moment in U.S. Russian relations. Since you've been writing this book, we've had the events in Ukraine. Can you tell us about this moment and why it's important?
Well, I think finally people in the United States and in Europe too are beginning to realize that we have a very formidable opponent in Vladimir Putin. And the nature of the regime that he's established is significantly different than any other regime that we've had in Russia, much less in most other European or other countries. And so we really need to focus on what are the threats that a regime of this type pose? How is power being used by Russia? And what is the best way to respond to it? So it is a very important moment, I feel.
Yes, and the U.S. has been gun to respond with sanctions and so on. You have said when you were starting the book that you were looking for what you call the authoritarian moment, which is the moment Russia somehow made this decision to go on this non-democratic, non-liberal in the classical sense path. When was that? And what? How did you identify it? And what do you think was the hour that it happened?
Oh, I don't know. It was a Friday evening for sure. No, I don't know. But I really was trying to figure out when did they decide to do what they clearly had done. I mean, all of a sudden, academic world, we were, all of us, no longer talking about Russia as an emerging democracy. When did they decide to take a different path? And did they blunder into the different path? Or, you know, is Putin an accidental autocrat? So I really very kind of slowly, steadfastly climbed back chronologically. I came to the conclusion that they did not plan to build a politically liberal system at all. This is in the Putin era. Economically liberal, yes, but not politically liberal. And that was a big difference.
And you found some interesting documents about that, including one from Kommersant.
Right. It's a document that was leaked from the presidential administration from the Kremlin and was written in 1999. So Putin was prime minister. He was getting ready to be named as acting president by Boris Yeltsin, and he needed a plan. And so this was the plan that was proposed. And of course, it was a secret document. And just before he was inaugurated in May, kind of a last-ditch effort, I suppose we would have to say by political liberals, to derail this. This plan was leaked from the Kremlin. Somebody got fired for leaking it, and it was revealed in Kommersant. And then it disappeared from the internet. So I managed to get a copy of it, and it really presents a blueprint of the task of every single department in the Kremlin, what they were publicly going to say they were tasked with doing, and what they were privately, secretly, actually going to be doing. And at the center of all of this was a central role for the new KGB, the FSB, the security services, of which Vladimir Putin had been a member.
That's fascinating. See if you can answer this short. It's hard to answer short. Would we be where we are if Russia had no oil?
Well, I think any country that is 9 to 11 time zones wide is going to absorb our interests and demand our attention. The fact that it is practically limitless in the vast number of raw materials, including oil, that it possesses, suggests that Russia has a unique ability to go it alone. And we want it to be part of the European and Western civilizational mission. But if it chooses not to, it can, under certain circumstances, make it. So unlike, you know, the kind of vast web of interactions that we all have, and all states are interdependent in these days, and Russia is too involved in those. It needs customers for the oil. Nevertheless, it's in a uniquely strong position.
That's very important that you say that. What was so contentious about your book that the British hesitated to publish it? You tell this story beautifully in your book, but could you recap for our audience?
Sure. Well, in Britain, they have very poor libel laws. They don't have a First Amendment, and they don't have any protection in terms of the ability of people to repeat and research and publicize reasonable conclusions based on public record. So in order for you, as an author, to survive a libel suit, and the Russian oligarchs engage widely in libel tourism, in order for you to survive that, you have to prove in a British court of law that what you've said is true. And just because 14 other people have said it's true is no protection. So it's almost impossible to win in a British libel case.
And so the publisher hesitated to publish. It just gives us a sense of how serious the threat to our freedom can be. We're talking here about Putin's kleptocracy and what it is, by Professor Duisha, what it is that other books are not, is it really traces the decline in Russia from the point when we were watching and hoping new democracy to something less, minute by minute. It's what in journalism sometimes we call a TikTok, because you go so beautifully all the way back. I would be remiss, because this is the Hayek Prize for which you are a finalist, to ask if there's any relation between your ideas or what you found to that which Friedrich Hayek found, looking at the end of freedom with concepts like the road to serfdom.
Right. You know, Hayek was a professor at London School of Economics, where I got my PhD much later, 20 years later. But obviously his long shadow was still being cast over the economic and political debates of the era when I was at London School of Economics. And the thing that I think is his greatest contribution that had an effect on this book is that economic liberalism is critical for the establishment of a democratic society. And the Russians realized that too when socialism fell. They realized that socialism and a planned economy could not produce the kind of freedom that they had hoped for, that it led inexorably to totalitarianism. So economic liberalism is critical. And many of the economists who were close to Yeltsin and then even to Putin in the early years were, I would say, even libertarians, people like Illarionov and so forth. But Hayek, of course, took this a little further, and he realized that economic liberalism is not enough. You have to have rule of law, and you have to have, to a certain extent, political liberalism. That economic liberalism was not going to lead in and of itself to democracy. And this focus, his focus on the necessity of rule of law, is just critical for understanding what went wrong in Russia. They have, in some ways, you could say, a mismanaged, a misshaped, economically liberal system. But it's subject to such abuse. And as Hayek often said, if you have fraud at the center of a system, you are not going to be able to establish democracy. Not going to be able to create the conditions for freedom.
Well, we want to thank you for pointing out the necessary conditions for freedom and some of the other conditions, and also for, it's a bit sad, showing the prophetic aspect of Hayek through the Russian model. I've been speaking with Professor Karen Duisha. She is a 2015 finalist for the Hayek Prize. This is the prestigious prize for books in the spirit of Hayek, sponsored by the Manhattan Institute and funded generously by Thomas and Diane Smith. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Amity.